Welcome to the WTF Show podcast from Bangkok, Thailand, presented by Vimal Kogar. Tune in to get your dose of weekly verbal Red Bull.
Tell us a little bit about how you were brought up, where you were brought up, where you went to school.
I think it starts off, I was born in Kerala, which is in the southern tip of India. Grew up in Bangkok ever since I was 6 to 8 months old. Now, that is where I met Anshu before I really had consciousness, awareness of things. Anshu was the neighbor next door. So ever since, we've been friends since nappy buddies, right? Disgusting fact is that my mom always says that he used to play around in his pee-pee. So he would pee all over the place and then he would play around in it. So I think all these years later, we went to school, went to university, went to ABAC, Assumption University in Thailand. And then went to Thai Sikh International School, right? And then after that, it's when we spend time in the corporate, that's in the corporate world. That's where the story starts off into our land. So that's where the background comes. But I know this guy since the nappy years, as my mom says.
So what about you?
I come from Jamshedpur, India, and I've just learned that it's not really a city everyone hears every now and then. So, I come from Jamshedpur. I know him for donkey years. And, like you said, in the last 32 years, we have a lot of dirt that we carry on each other.
Okay. So let's start from the beginning. Our land, how does this transpire? You need a piece of land. You need an idea in your head. You need a mission statement, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And then you go ahead to this vacant plot of land and you do something with it. So how does this start?
I think the story starts the complete other way. I think that what you explained are perfect ideas for perfect business plans. But in a real world thing, I think if money is not the core objective, if you're looking for internal change and you're looking for some kind of change in your life, then the story starts with inspiration and passion towards something. So I think it was the need to step away from it all. And the first step of stepping away, so me and Anshu took a trip to Nepal. And we had a fantastic time in Nepal. Did a lot of things in Nepal that we don't want to talk about sometimes, right? At least not on public radio. And once we came back from Nepal, for me, I just couldn't take corporate life anymore. I was like, it's not that I can't take it. I've got to create change now. And that first step was to contact Elephant Sanctuary that I knew nearby. And I said, hey, do you guys know in Kanchanaburi, do you guys know any piece of land that I can take over? And they showed me a bunch of farmland. I said, no, I'm looking for a jungle. Like I want elephants bursting through. I want something like that. And they said, yeah, there's this one piece of land that's in the middle of nowhere, abandoned. We haven't looked into it for like 7 years. Would you like to go there and spend some time there? And to be honest, in the beginning, it was just a crazy place to run around naked, right? So because it was a piece of land that was not in a national park. And I was so personally tired of going to national parks, trying to find something to do in national park. But because it's public land, you can't do anything there. So we got this piece of land and it had a destroyed structure on it. And we spent a year fixing the structure. Right? And that's where the journey began. So everything, the mission statement, all that stuff came after that. The beginning was just a drive to kind of take one step forward, a leap of faith, a tiny leap of faith into the direction that you want to go in. Yeah.
Like anything that you start, you're always going to run into problems. And our land for the last 5.5, 6 years has constantly been about working the problems. How do we work the problem so that we are able to, when we figured out our vision and mission, we are finally able to kind of drive towards that mission, drive towards that vision. And slowly it's just kept growing because there are so many people, so many young guys that are in the exact same spot as we are, where life is mundane in an office. It's boring.
And I think there's just to add on that, I think there's the word is already coined. It's called NDD. It stands for Nature Deficit Disorder. Right. The fact that we humans over millions of millennia have always been used to having nature around us all the time. Right. And suddenly we don't have that nature. around us. So we are constantly in contact with chemicals and stuff that we rub off on our hands the whole time. Last time we've seen a few big trees has been a year, maybe. So when you don't have, when you feel inside that, hey, I want to just step out and get some of that, like really go into some of that. That's where I think that what Arantxa mentioned just comes in. Like it's the inner need from you to say, I want to go outside and do something that might be closer to my core, a core being called. And not saying everybody has to have it at a large amount. It could be that people just want it in a really, really small amount, like just a small dose of nature, which is also why I think people bring plants into the house. It's a dose of nature into the house. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the timeline. When exactly did we start this? Where did we, how did we progress in like the last couple of years? And where we see ourselves in 3 years, in, do we have a 5-year plan? I want you to try and chronologically tell us what's going on.
Okay. So April 26, 2015, that's the first time that I saw this piece of land, right? I was shown around for a few plots of land. I come into this dilapidated structure in which the whole roof had fallen down. But just about 20 meters from the front of the house was a footprint of an elephant. And, you know, for many of you who are listening to this, like the footprint of an elephant, I tell you, is very distinguishable because there's nothing like that that has such a big circular effect and just goes into the ground for a few centimeters. Like, you know that that's definitely a big creature has stepped in, right? And inside the footprint of the elephant was a footprint of a deer inside that. That was the moment in which I was like, this is the plot of land we're going to do this on. Because for some reason, there's animals here, and I want to be here with those animals. So this is April 2015, first time the decision was made to say, they've got to do this. And then after that, for a year, we basically were just working the land, the structure. The structure was destroyed, so we would tent on the site. And for a year, we had contractors, we brought in people to fix the whole structure. Fix the structure, and then back in time at that point, Anshu also moved in to our land, and he spent about 4 to 6 months over there at that time. And he wasn't working in Bangkok at that time, so he had moved out. He spent 4 to 6 months there. At the end of 1 year, I decided to finally leave Bangkok too, right? So for me, it was a point in which it was of no return. I was constantly thinking of leaving Bangkok. But it was a good thing that somebody else made that decision for me, and that was a corporation I was working for. They decided to fire me. So they came back and they said, you know, so, but it was almost like I was ready to make that decision. So when they came in to have the discussion with me, I was like, yes, where is the papers? I'm ready to sign the papers. So signed off on the papers. A year into getting the piece of land, the place is set up that you can live there. Remember, we have no electricity. We have no water. Right. We have, well, it's a bit in the jungle, so food's a little hard to get. And we have just one structure to live in. So how do we get drawn from there? In that 1 year, it is figuring out solar power. How do we get water there? How do we build the next structures? Right. All that had to go into it. Right. So that was the primary setup for 1 year. And then after that, from then on, it was opening up our land to people to come in, right? So I think I'm just going to add up on that in this bit, yeah. So
basically after this first year, we were, I think it was like a weekend I had gone, I was there, we both were there actually, and suddenly all the dogs that we have in our land started howling out really loudly, you know? And then we saw, you know, a creature moving in the distance, you know? Basically we're like, oh shoot, That's an elephant, you know. And then we both kind of ran up onto the treehouse that we had built over there, and dead silent, you know. And then we see this massive creature just go right under the treehouse, you know. That was like, hey, we've got the basics set up. We've got everything someone potentially needs to be smack in the middle of nature and be able to enjoy wildlife. This is our time. We need to start opening it up to other people's. So for the next maybe 3-4 months, we played around with a lot of different programs that we can do, a lot of different packages, activities that we can do in that whole area. And once all of that was fixed out, about, you know, mid 2017, I would say, yeah. We were...
So just to add up on that one, one of the most important things was that the whole experience of coming to our land was supposed to be a nature immersive experience. We wanted digital detox. We want to immerse you in nature. We wanted you to be wowed, like have an awe-inspiring moment of looking at nature and going, wow, I didn't know it was this beautiful. Like it's like in the movies, right? So to create that moment, we decided to not have people walk into our land or drive into our land. So no driving into our land at all. The reserve is blocked off by road entry. You have to go upriver about 6 kilometers, float down the river for about 40 minutes, and then walk through a jungle for 20 minutes to get to the Auerland base camp. So we designed it in such a way that everyone who comes there used that passage to come in. That took us those few months to kind of design it, safety issues, plug all that in. And now we've got it down to a T in terms of where you float from and come in. And then all these years, it's been working with that kind of a program. It's about, and at the same time, we open it up to other people too. Come on in and you guys can design your own programs here, mini programs over here. And so in the past 5 years, it's been stabilizing that business model while also kind of adding onto a funding-based business model as well. So those are the two primary things that's been happening in the past 5 years. So since April 2015.
So how does, you mentioned these elephants, obviously they are wild elephants. I want to know about, firstly, do you have professional people helping you with conservation? And secondly, the safety factor, because if I'm going to come and visit our land, Thailand, I want to know that me and my family are safe.
Yeah. So I think the first step is always to integrate community into it. Because why reinvent the wheel when you can build upon a knowledge base that's been there for hundreds of generations, right? They've been there. So the first thing we did was hire the local people to be our staff. So primarily, in Kanchanaburi, they call them Kaliang or the Karen population. And they're very well adept in the jungle. They're one of those kind of people who go into the jungle with a knife and build you a mall. You know, those kind of, so they have a lot of ability in them to do stuff like that. So I think getting them on board was first. And them knowing what to do, we learned a lot from them, right? Got to admit that technology was a huge help. So we've always depended on online sources, social media or YouTube especially, to extract a lot of information, to learn from other places in Thailand, Southeast Asia, or around the world on how elephants react or how conservation needs to be done as well. Yeah. So that's,
and I mean, throughout our journey, we've always, our main customer base is to say, we're an education center. So we attract a lot of researchers. We attract a lot of universities. We attract a lot of schools. And these are professionals that are in the field and are doing the exact same thing across the globe, doing the same kind of research, different geography to see what kind of results there are, right? And they are able to feed us, as a sense, information or direction to perfect what we started, as to speak.
And for that reason, just to come back on safety, we've never had a single high risk incident take place at our land now. The max is you'd get stung by a scorpion. And that's possible in any national park. You could go in there and you could get stung by a scorpion.
Luckily, our scorpions aren't really poisonous. It's like a nice bee sting.
Yeah. It's like a bee sting that lasts for 4 hours.
Nice bee sting.
Yeah. It's never nothing as a nice bee sting, but yeah, it's definitely a nice bee sting.
Okay, so I don't know what the word conservation means, and especially with regard to elephants. So explain to me, what does the word conservation mean?
I think that to most people, when you think of conservation, you're thinking about protection somehow. And you're thinking of protection and ensuring the survival of that species. And that's basically what it is. It's what can you do to ensure that the species has space to survive, to thrive, because the primary issue right now worldwide. So for example, let's take a look at interesting number. In the past 40 years, big question is, how many species do you think we have wiped out? Rimal, what about you? Let me ask you that. In the past 40 years, how many species do you think we have wiped, percentage of species, percentage wise? So if you had 100% in 40 years ago, how many species do you think exist now? Or like what percentage?
I guess maybe 20% wipe out or 10% right? Wipe out.
So we've wiped out 60%
okay.
of the animal life on the planet just in the past 40 years. Just 40. This is the primary idea of Our Land in its essence. Its very essence is, how do we increase wild spaces for wildlife and at the same time ensure that humans can coexist in that space? And this is why we have the Our Land Reserve, and we have the Our Land Eco Village in the heart of the reserve, and the education center in the heart of the eco village, right? So there's many elements to it in there. And the basic idea is, animals that are all around us, elephants that are coming out, and elephants in this case, when you're saying about specifically elephants, elephant conservation primarily means land conservation.
Okay.
Elephants need land, right? There are only 35,000 Asian elephants left in the world, and they're set to be extinct 40 years from now. That means in 40 years from now, you will not see an elephant in the wild. That's a really sad thought, right? I mean, like, we look at animals that are obvious, like elephants, lions, tigers. We look at these and things, we take them for granted they're going to be with us for the next few decades. Elephants are gone in 40 years of time. So that's one really important thing we need to keep in mind about, like, elephant conservation is basically, in a simple put, land conservation. If we can give them the land to do things, that is one big step forward in conservation of elephants. Yeah.
So conservation, yes, that's the aspect. Now, how do you get youth, younger people, people that want to make a difference and have everyday jobs, how do you change them into conservationists? You know, we can't do this job alone. Like you mentioned before, we can't do this job alone. Mm-hmm. So the idea is, land conservation is an expensive thing, because buying land property is expensive. Now, how do you buy property, leave it the way it is, have animals passing through it, and try to figure out a business model out of it? And that's where I think we're trying to take land conservation to a different step, where we have people investing in little plots of land. We have tree houses on that land, and what they get in return is, anytime they want to come stay, be in nature, you don't have to spend anymore. You have like your own little rugged treehouse. You can enjoy the wildlife when you're not there. And we have guests over, or tourists that want to come, researchers that want to come. They can come stay over there. And a part of the profit or the revenue is given out to these owners, as to speak. So you have your independent business and you're doing good at the same time.
Okay, so say I lived in London or Paris and say the airports opened up. How is my experience from landing at Sivanapumi Airport to getting to your place, checking in, the package in terms of the number of days I stay, how much does it cost? Go through this to me step by step for me, okay? So that the audience wants to know, if they want to book a holiday with you, or I don't want to use the word holiday, an adventure with you,
yeah,
next week,
yeah,
how do they do this? And if you can explain also how they access you on social media.
Okay. So I'll explain and chip in at any points. The main thing is, first of all, reaching out to us. So we have social, so we have Facebook, our Instagram pages, our websites. You know, you can look us up as Our Land Thailand, and you'll kind of pop us up on all the social media sites. The first step is just letting us know how long you want to stay for. So we have packages starting from half a day, 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 10 days, 21 days. We've done 21 day packages as well for students. Once the person decides that one of the packages they want, we design the package for them. So like, what kind of animals do you want to see? What kind of things do you want to learn? And Kanchanaburi is such a biodiverse area. Just to point out, Our Land is located in the Western Forest Complex. That is the largest contiguous forest complex in all of Southeast Asia.
Sorry, and where is that exactly?
In Kanchanaburi.
Okay, and where is Kanchanaburi?
It's on the west. It's 2.5 hours west of Bangkok.
Okay.
That's right. And so that is the first step, I guess, deciding on where they, what they want to do. Once they land in the airport, and the airports open up, and the next step is moving from Bangkok to Kanchanaburi. For this, our most advanced and preferred option is electric vehicles, right? So we've partnered with EV Society, which is a electric vehicle provider, to provide us transport from all the way from Bangkok to Kanchanaburi, get dropped off there, spend the days with us, and the end of the program can again be picked up and taken back. right? So that's the first part of it. We prefer that option as well for our guests as well, since it's, you know, low on carbon. Once the guests come in, as I said, we meet them at a certain point at a coffee shop nearby, explain what the purpose of going to our land is and what they're going to be doing. And then they get, we, along with them and our staff team, drop off at a riverside 6 kilometers north of our land.
And how do you get to that river point?
From there, we have our own pickup trucks to transport you there, right?
Okay.
All your bags will be taken through the off-road route to our land.
Okay.
Right. And, but the guest itself will then be moved all the way up and then float down the river only in life jackets. So now most people are thinking in a river, you're thinking of a raft or you're thinking of a boat, something. We have none of that stuff. It's just a life jacket and you put the life jacket on in a different style. And that can only be explained by pictures, right? And then float down the river and then walk through the jungle. So walk down the river for about 30 to 40 minutes. And then walk through the jungle for another 20 minutes, learning about the jungle.
Okay, so just let me stop you there.
Yeah.
You're not on a boat. You're actually floating in the water. That's what you're telling me.
That's right. You're in the river.
Okay.
So your water is up to your chest or up to your neck.
Okay.
Right? So depending on, you know, depending on buoyancy and the amount of water in the river, it's up to there. And you are floating down for 30 to 40 minutes, even dropping by a freshwater island along the way. Right, just to see what the power of the river is, right? And then eventually coming to the river pier point and walking through the jungle, learning about a whole bunch of stuff until you get to the Our Land Eco Village. Yeah.
Well, so just regarding the floating part, so if you're not getting the picture, it's like tubing without the tube. Okay. So physically in the water. And I mean, in terms of cost, so because I handle most of the financial side and the sales side of our land, costs vary in the day you're staying, how long you're staying, right? But on an average, you're looking at about maybe $80 for an overnight all-inclusive stay plus meals. And that goes up as you stay longer, basically. And if you have different, more adventurous activities than others would do.
So tell me about age groups. How does it break down if I have a 5-year-old, a 50-year-old, a 75-year-old? How does this work?
First is always, most of our programs are so tailor-made. So it's always like first asking them, what level of activity can the person take? The general program is designed so that anyone from the ages of 4, I'd say to about 60, they can very comfortably do the trip, right? Even though we do say that we're going in the water with just a life jacket, we do have a safety raft with us.
Okay.
So several times guests who are afraid of getting themselves into a huge natural water body like the river, I've had people come out of the river and they're like, oh my God, is there a crocodile here? Like the first thing you look at is like this huge flowing river. And are you really asking me to get into the river with a life jacket on and just float? I'm not tied to a rope, to any staff or anything. I'm just floating. So to give them a peace of mind, we say, we have the safety raft with you. So there are people who are like saying, we'll just sit on the safety raft the whole time. I don't want to get into the water. We have guests who have done that before, right? And once they come, so like I said, we can basically cater to anyone. And the youngest we've had is 3 years old. That's the youngest we've had getting in the river, right? We've had 2-year-olds sitting in the raft the whole time as well, right? With occasionally getting in the water. So age exactly isn't exactly much of a problem as long as they're willing to experience the nature there.
Sorry.
And remind me, the oldest person to ever be at Our Land was 92 years old.
Okay, and that person floated down the river.
No, he didn't. He did not. So he chose the path that Anshu just mentioned. He chose the off-road path to come in, to come inside to Our Land. So just to add in though, so that's just the first part of the trip though. You've just arrived at the Eco Village. And usually, you really start the float at 2 p.m. because the water in the river starts to go up at about afternoon times. So it's a perfect time to float. You arrive at Our Land about 4 p.m. and it's just, you're in the middle of the jungle and there's this eco village and you've got lanterns and you're surrounded by nature and we've got these three lovely dogs. And so life, for a second, you feel like you're another world. You've just popped into another world. And you literally are, because there's no electricity from the outside world. There's no water from the outside world. You literally are just there, right? And from then on, experience can start off from, number one, just spending at night watching wild elephants coming by. Or you can go learn about snake education courses. We have a snake rescue center called Serpentine, right, in which people learn about different kinds of snakes in Thailand.
So if I just stop you there, you have a particular skill, I would say, with snakes. Am I right, Vijo?
Yes, that's right.
Tell me your specific skill with snakes.
It's just that I guess my skill with snakes is that I can handle venomous snakes, right? So I have been...
So you have a degree in that, or...
You can call it that because, you know...
Yeah, his degree is getting bitten by a lot of non-poisonous snakes.
That is true. I've lost count. My hands are full of tiny scars and stitches that I've got from non-venomous snakes. My girlfriend gets really worked up every time something happens with a non-venomous snake. But I did do my course, a mini course with the Snake Farm of Thailand. So it's called Queen Savapam Memorial Institute, where they did 2 to 3 days of training with me. And then I spent 1 year with the Bangkok Snake Rescue Foundation, right? And I would work Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, I'd go to work. And after 5 p.m., from 5 to midnight, I would be at the rescue center waiting for snake calls. So that's where I got most of my training. And my mentor, Achan Pinyo, is a very well-known character because now he's covered by BBC, CNN, France Grenquette. All the big stations have covered him because he's a real character. He's a fireman that catches deadly snakes and non-deadly snakes all over Thailand. So for that, I guess my special skill is the ability to handle venomous snakes or non-venomous snakes in general. And this is why we run the snake rescue center called Serpentine. Yeah.
So the question now is the end game. Here, we've set this up now. It's been X number of years, 5-6 years. And we have some form of a mission, right?
Yes.
We have now revenue.
Yes.
Right. So what's the end game? Are you trying to change the type of person I am? Are you trying to make me a conservation type of person? Are you going to make me green? Are you going to make me more ecological? What is your task to your audience?
Okay, so I kind of want to address this, yeah. Joe is a conservationist at heart. So asking him this question is like asking one in a million guys of what they would do. I am more of I guess, the right conservationist that we want to kind of approach. Everyone needs to be a conservationist. You can just do a little part of it to do it. Life is about balance. It's not about any one extremity. And expecting someone to be completely extreme, leave everything behind and go out of the city because you've lived 32 years in the city and you can't take it anymore is asking a lot from somebody or asking a lot from the average person. So having a balance, I think that's the goal here. Or teaching the balance.
So I think that's definitely the goal because I think I'm a more extreme version of that goal. I've left the city. I live in the jungle. You know, people think I've gone nuts or crazy. Like this is a guy who had too much pressure in the corporate world, was suffering from anxiety and depression, suddenly popped one day. And then now he's this crazy guy. But I think that in a very, very base level, we're dealing with this thing called biophobia. Biophobia is the primary reason why jungles will be destroyed and why we will kill ourselves to a large extent as a species. Biophobia is the feeling that every child has now and adults have them too. And I see them in adults more than I see them in children, but children have them too. And this is a known fact. There's research done on it. It's called biophobia. It's the fear of everything bio. You touch something, you touch an earthworm, you go, ugh, it's so sick. That's like, you know, you have kids touching earthworm, go, oh my God, it's so slimy, and then they have the same feeling towards dirt. Suddenly, dirt's okay. Dirt's not okay. They have this, everything else in the city, everything that's chemically treated and filtered, that's okay. But suddenly dirt is not okay. So this is an example of biophobia. I think one of the big things we deal with, and because we work with so many kids in education and stuff like that, is to deal with biophobia. And how do you make it into biolove or biophilia? And how do you make them want to touch nature or want to be in nature? Because that, I feel, will be better for us as a species as a whole. So that's kind of, I feel, like what the end goal from my side is. Yeah.
And if today there's only 1 hour land. We have a lot of volunteers that are there who have come and they've gone back to their own home countries and kind of started some form of hour land. Mm-hmm. So I would say at the end of the day, mm-hmm. if there's about 1,000 hour lands, we've already achieved our goal. It doesn't have to be directly from us, right? But it, we were the inspiration, maybe. I mean, they, maybe, you know.
We can call it Bimo's land.
But the idea is, if 1,000 hour lands are available tomorrow, land has been conserved, all the species that would have wiped out because nature was restricted for them or land was restricted for them, they are suddenly out and about. And it's creating these pockets all over the world, I guess.
Is there anything spiritual? I'm wondering if there's a spiritual angle in this because you guys have this look, I would like to say. You know, both of you guys are you have shaven heads, right? Yeah.
You look like monks.
And I didn't want to say that, but okay, let's go there. Is there any spiritual angle to our land, Thailand?
I think there always is. I think that internally. It is about, I think even the snake, for example, I was telling Anshu earlier today, like, snakes usually represent resurrection and rebirth. In any culture, when you go back into it, the Aztecs, the Mesopotamians, the Indians, snakes, the presence of snakes means it's resurrection, right? It means that you are about to shed your skin and become a new person. I think that there is that aspect, that the spirituality of it, is, and it's also why if you look in the Our Land logo, you find the Bodhi leaf. The main logo itself is the Bodhi leaf. And then along with it, all the animals. And then there's a circle of sustainability. All these things come in because I feel like it is at the end of the day, all the stuff we're talking about, we're going to tell people, okay, do that. Do this. Don't buy plastic water bottles. Drive lesser cars. These are all ideas that are on the surface. But on the inside, if you just really go deep into, it's a feeling of, to some extent, a simple way you can say gratitude. Because when you're more grateful for the things that you already have in your life, suddenly you're not a consumer anymore. Because, I mean, we all know that, you know, any of the shopping malls would not operate very well if there was a bunch of monks sitting in there. Right. Walking through them, they wouldn't be selling anything. The other day I was walking in the BTS station. I'm not in Bangkok very often, only here like once a month or once in 2 months. I realized at one point I could see 13 ads at one position, including the BTS cover and this thing and everything. I could see 13 advertising popping information to me, telling me that I need that product to make myself happy, whether it's healthy or happy or whatever it was. So I think the spiritual aspect for me is always about that. It's about like it's about how do you find the deeper meaning within yourself so that you're not externalizing that feeling to go take it outside.
Like Joe was saying, you know, we for centuries human beings have always lived within nature and this whole nature phobia that's happening, you know. Nature is something that is spiritually already connected to the humankind, as to speak, you know, and everyone has a soul, you know, you're born with it, you know, so there's always, how I like to say it, you know, food for the soul and food for your basic needs, you know what I mean? Your food for your basic needs is your day job that you do, but you don't have enough time for your soul. So, you know, in a way, nature or what our land is doing or what we're trying to create with our land is food for your soul. Feed your soul so that you're happier. And it's been proven. The happier you are, the lower medical problems that you have.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure for me to host Our Land curators, Vijo and Anshu. Before we go, I'd like to invite you to do two things. One is to maybe recommend somebody for the WTF show next round. Mm-hmm. And you also get a special vote. You get to nominate and vote Youth of the Year for 2021, which we will host in a 5-star hotel at the end of 2021. And hopefully you guys will be there. Okay. Now I'm going to give you the last word. And I think you need to also tell our audience how you've already told us how they get in touch, but sort of just give us one particular package that you have for the WTFers out there, right? Mm-hmm. And good luck to you guys. Mm-hmm. I am extremely overwhelmed and proud to have you guys on the WTF show. I hope you enjoyed yourself. And the last word goes to you.
So I think the best package would be the 2-day, 1-night weekend package. So if you're in Bangkok, it's most accessible. It's about 2,500 baht. Not about. It is 2,500 baht per person. And everything is included. So you have 2 days of activities packed in there. River float is included. You have different conservation activities in there. And you're going to be staying in the main dormitory style or a hut. And you can choose to camp out in the treehouse as well if you want.
And if you're a vegetarian, how does that work?
So we, because we're catering to a lot of different clients, we do both vegan, vegan food, we do vegetarian, we do non-veg, we do Islamic food, halal food, if it's required. Of course, depends completely on the customer.
So, of course, the overall idea is to kind of, usually for one-night guests, we usually try to stick to a vegetarian diet. Because your overall idea is to lower the amount of carbon footprint that's there from that. But besides that, besides the official package, I just want to send out a spiritual package to people. So I kind of want to tell people that you can reach out to us if you just want to spend some time in nature or you're kind of lost on what the next step is with
nature. Do you think it might work for somebody who's a youth, who's out there maybe looking for a job or... just sort of lost in his corporate world?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We were just talking about that today. The thing is, I am 36 this year, and I have 4 titanium implants in my backbone. So I am getting older and slower on the move. And right now I am the primary guide. So we are definitely looking for somebody who can help us with guiding, moving us on, and doing a lot of work. And the thing with our land is the job description is never one thing. You've got a lot of work to do there. So you will learn about everything from sustainability, nature conservation, to guiding, to everything. But besides that aspect too, even if you're just looking for some nature time, please come by. Please ask us questions about how you can get closer to nature and, you know, help us reach out. Help you reach out to this, you know, to your soul. And I must really say a big, big thank you to Vimal. Thank you so much, Vimal, for allowing us to use this channel to reach out to people who are definitely craving nature. Thank you so much, Vimal. So much, so much. Much appreciated on that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Vimal, for inviting us. And your show, W2F, is perfectly in line with us. So, you know, you're creating WTF moments for your customers. We want to create WTF moments for you guys, too.
Thank you. And I hope everybody else enjoyed the WTF show today. We will meet up next week again with more exciting guests. Goodbye from the WTF show this week. Goodbye.
That's it from the WTF show. Vimal and the team from WTF show would like to thank all our sponsors. Tune in next week for another great gig with people making a difference to your future. For advertising spots, go to the WTF show IG page and get more info or contact Vimal at 6681-616-5987.